Journalism History, a podcast that rips out the pages of your history books to re-examine the stories you thought you knew and the ones you were never told. I'm your host, Terry Finneman, guiding you through our own drafts of history. This episode is sponsored by the Texas Christian University Bob Schieffer College of Communication, where students learn to practice journalism with the persistence, civility, and integrity embodied by legendary CBS News journalist Bob Schieffer. The nation will celebrate the 100th anniversary of women having the right to vote in 2019 and 2020. Therefore, this is an excellent time to learn more about the role of the media during the social movement. We've created 5 mini-episodes featuring suffrage researchers who spoke at an American Journalism Historians Conference. This is part 1. In this episode, Linda Lumsden of the University of Arizona discusses a historiographic perspective on the state of suffrage and the media research.
Okay, hi, I'm Linda Lumsden. Thank you for coming. And this is just going to be a taste of what the long historiography of almost a half century of suffrage research is, suffrage of the media. I'm going to mention the pioneers. I'm going to give you a brief overview of basically what's been scholarship has occurred since 2000 and offer some suggestions on where we go from here. 2 suffrage journalism historians have done historiographies of suffrage journalism only, suffrage press. This one is the first historiography of the broader suffrage and the media. So you'll hear some new names. First, I want to trace sort of the pioneers of the study of the suffrage press. Lynn Mazel-Walters, 76, did the first study of the Revolution, then she did Women's Journal. Sherrilyn Cox Bennion, who is here in the room, told the world about all sorts of West newspapers in the West for the first time. We have also Kitty Enders and Terry Luck had edited in the mid-1990s women's periodicals of the United States, and they described 16 suffrage journals and 3 anti-suffrage journals. As you can see, these early years were pretty much an act of reclaiming, right, to the historical record, these publications that had pretty much been lost to history. Let's see. Also, too, Linda Steiner's groundbreaking study of 19th century suffrage periodicals brought a cultural shift to the field, and she showed how they brought community and a sense of purpose to far-flung women in 19th century America. Martha Solomon also, too, looked at the rhetoric of suffrage press. Lauren Kessler was the first person to look at mainstream press of suffrage with the Portland Oregonian. Elizabeth Burt did a lot of with the anti-suffragists, and she started introducing more theoretical aspects of it. Roger Straitmatter has written about several of the suffrage periodicals in his various books. Sidney Bland, Maureen Beasley, who's also here in the room, and Manuela Thurner has talked about the anti-suffrage press. Despite all of these great works, we still await a sweeping analysis of the suffrage print culture's effect on American politics and culture, the broader culture. So there's no holistic analysis of the relationship between mainstream media and the suffrage movement. There are books out there, including one of my own, that look briefly, devote a few pages to the role of the mainstream press in the suffrage movement. Rampant Women in the Right of Assembly looks at how they covered the parades and different events. Brooks' book last year about how male supporters of suffrage looks a lot here and there of how the press covered the relationship between the suffragists and the mainstream media. So far, the most comprehensive look at mainstream media's relationship to the suffrage movement is Genevieve McBride's examination of how Wisconsin women marshaled the press in their fight for suffrage and other reforms. That could be a model, I think, for others. So could Sarah Ege's work. She mines this very rich print culture of thousands of pamphlets, leaflets, newspapers, et cetera, to show that the practical decisions that shaped the suffrage campaign in the Midwest, where largely rural people are separated, it was communication was a bit of a challenge. Her regional study, again, I think would be a nice framework for a look at the national relationship between mainstream media and the suffrage press. Another possible model is Alice Faz's lively look at on assignments, newspaper women, and the making of the modern public sphere, which touches on suffrage. Other scholars, though, have embarked on new cultural studies that have offered original perspectives on old periodicals. Mary Carver looked at letters to the Women's Journal. Amber Rossner showed how scholars can unearth new insights about familiar individuals in her look at the work of popular columnist Jenny June from the 19th century. And that article also demonstrates how searchable digitized collections can also advance research in suffrage, because she used databases to trace more than 60 of Crowley's articles over 40 years. Scholars in other disciplines, I have to say, have really done a lot to breathe some fresh air into the study of suffrage media. Political scientist Barbara Bards and drama scholar Susan Gossett combined their expertise to come up with Declaration of Independence, Women and Political Power in 19th Century American Fiction. One of my favorites is Victoria Alwell's creative analysis of typewriter fiction, and how, which was a thing in the 1910s, and how it affected the broader culture. More relevant, 2011, there was a book called Treacherous Texts, U.S. Suffrage Literature, 1846-1946, edited by Mary Chapman, her name's going to come up again, Angela Mills, and they found startling affinities between popular literature and suffrage propaganda. So the oldest work of suffrage history has been fodder for 21st century historians, beginning with Julie Desjardins, who in 2003 illuminated the ideological clashes and the personal antagonisms that bias the history of women's suffrage, which really is the beginning of a historiography of suffrage in the media. Six volumes over 40 years, 5,700 pages. More recently, Lisa Tatro incorporated public memory studies into her bold reassessment of the history, which she calls a stunning act of historical imagination. Her most important critique of the old history is the whitening of the suffrage movement. Racism within the suffrage movement has really been a major theme of 21st century scholarship. Jen McDonald went back to the Revolution to analyze what she termed Stanton's racist rhetoric. Another book I like, Teresa Zakodnik's book, Press Platform Pulpit, Black Feminist Publics in the Era of Reform. One of her essays in there is about an essay called Women Versus the Indian, 1891, by Anna Julia Cooper, a woman who was a black feminist, an educator, leader of the women's club movement, and a journalist. And she really pioneered the concept of intersectionality a century before the term existed. Black male suffragists, maybe not surprisingly, have gotten more attention than female black suffragists. As early as 1940, in the Journal of Negro History, Benjamin Quarles wrote about Frederick Douglass's suffrage work, pointing out that North Star's motto was "Right is of no sex." Others have talked about W.E.B. Du Bois's considerable support for suffrage through the crisis, and others. Full-fledged biographies of female black suffragist journalists are few and far between. Jane Rhodes' book about Marianne Shad Carey is the standard right now. I will say the most important black feminist to be retrieved by others is Frances Ellen Watkins Harper. Again, did many things, but also wrote about suffrage. Her work has been lost, I think, because she did so many things. That would be a nice paper for somebody who wanted to research her journalism as it regards to suffrage. In fact, again, because of databases, I think a major work might be somebody to look at black press's writings on suffrage. Nothing has existed, but you could do it now. That would be a major contribution. So I'm going to jump right up to the British suffragist scholars, who I'm going to say offer us a blueprint for how to do these important works that don't look at small pieces of the suffrage press, but who really look at suffrage's contribution to the larger culture, to introducing women into the public sphere. My favorite book is Mary Chapman's recent work on Making Noise, Suffrage Press and Modernism. And she links American Suffragette, which was a pretty militant little newspaper in New York City in maybe 1912, to basically saying this was a harbinger of literary modernism because it was loud, because it had loud fonts, it had loud headlines, they had newsies out there screaming the name of the newspaper to sell it. They had bright yellow bags. It was just loud. And this is modernism. let's see, to conclude, one of her chapters in there I really liked is goes back to the history of women's suffrage, and it uses the very humble medium of the scrapbook to explain the importance of it. She uses the work of I can't think of her name, but anyways, a woman who did a bigger book about how scrapbook was really important to Americans, and she points out that Susan B. Anthony had collected 33 scrapbooks over her long career, and that is the basis of the history of women's suffrage. Eleanor Flexner said she was a hoarder. and now she says, and she has transformed the idea of this private parlor pastime of, you know, filling up your scrapbook, and she has reframed it as a loud act of public, the public being in the public role, in the public environment, and making, being a public woman. So anyways, I'll leave it at that, and I'll leave it to the younger scholars to take off with some of these themes. Thank you.
Thanks for tuning in, and additional thanks to our sponsor, Texas Christian University. Until next time, I'm your host, Terry Finneman, signing off with the words of Edward R. Murrow. Good night, and good luck.